We'll just get it started. I just quickly, I think most of you know the housekeeping already. So we've had a quick change of program today because Swami Noah says and get with a different another session that he needs to go to. So for today, we will do the Dhamma talk now and then the Q&A, and then we'll put a guided sitting practice after in 1 hour. Sorry,
we'll
be leaving in 1 hour.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chamila. So then we'll start the session. We were discussing Kayagata Sati Sutta, and that is one of the one of the sutta where Buddha discusses about how mindfulness on the body will lead to various benefits. And this Kayagata Sati Sutta comes in Majjhima Nikaya, mindfulness of the body. And they are actually, the idea is that we are trying to keep our attention, our focus on the body, various bodily processes, various bodily activities. And sometimes we are looking at the body in a different angle so that we have a different perspective and proper perspective, proper idea about our body. So under this topic, we discuss about mindfulness of breathing, anapanasati. That is one of the key kamatahana or whatever the meditation object, which is actually helping us to come back to the body, come back to our own understanding. And then we discuss about four postures. We are standing, sitting, lying down, and walking. So those are the four main postures that we are daily maintaining, and by keeping our attention on those four postures, that also leads to maintain our attention, bring our attention back to the body. And then we discuss about clear comprehension, how to improve clear comprehension using various daily activities. Say for example, while you are wearing your clothes, while eating your meals, having your meals, and maybe walking, sitting, standing, lying down, while talking with another person, while keeping quiet, stretching your limbs. So likewise, there are so many daily activities that we engage with. And they are, if we maintain mindfulness, so it become that we are trying to sort of incorporate mindfulness to daily activities. It is not that we are doing anything special. We actually engage with various activities, but only thing is our mind is not connected with that activity. Say for example, we are waiting for a bus. At that time, we may be thinking about various things, what is going here and there, and we may be regretting about something happened in the past, and maybe anxious about what is going to happen in the future. So likewise, there are various situations. While standing, even though the body is standing, our mind is not really connected to this standing posture. But if we are able to really connect with the body at that time, then we will recognize what is this standing posture is like, what are the various sensations available, what is the orientation of the body, and what are various sensations. So likewise, it is interesting to come back to the body and to recognize and to have a sort of intimate relationship with the body. And then we discuss in a different angle about bodily parts, because even though we consider this body belongs to me, it is mine, and this is I, something like that, then Buddha asks us to look at the body as a collection of various bodily parts. So that is also a kind of an eye-opening, because if we don't think like that, we think that this is beautiful, this is ugly, I mean, I am not handy, I am not pretty, or I am tall, I am short. So likewise, with respect to the body, we really identify with it. And we can even get into quarrels if someone is sort of teasing us, bullying us. So in this situation, if we look at the body as 32 parts, it consists of 32 parts, it's a kind of a arrangement, assembly of 32 parts, then we get a different perspective, because it is not we take the body as one unit, but it's a combination, it's a kind of a accumulation of so many parts. Each individual part is not interesting, not attractive. So if we had any sort of conceit related to the body, or if we had any sort of lust towards the body, and even towards someone else's body. So if we analyze our own body with respect to this kind of a situation, then we will understand, I mean, it is not a single thing. It's a kind of a combination of various components, various bodily parts. Individually, none of them appear beautiful, none of them appear attractive. But once they put together, once they were accumulated, ignorantly we consider it as a beautiful thing. Beautiful something, beautiful my body, beautiful his body, beautiful her body. So likewise, we consider the whole thing as a kind of a deluded way, kind of a compact view is there. We are being deluded by this compactness view. And that can be eliminated, that can be penetrated by practicing 32 parts. And Buddha takes us further into elements to recognize various element characteristics available in our body. And through that, we are able to understand that this body not only consists of 32 parts, but if we go further, we can recognize it's a series of element characteristics. At any given time, any of these characteristics are present. Many of these characteristics are present, and accordingly, one of those four elements are predominant. Say, for example, if you are paying your attention to the body and you recognize a certain stiffness, hardness, roughness, smoothness, lightness, heaviness, all these are representing earth element. So whenever these characteristics are present and you could recognize them, that indicate that at that given moment, the earth element has come to the prominent. So on the other hand, suppose you can recognize kind of a floating kind of a thing. You are sort of, the body is wavering, body is shaking, body is moving, certain vibrations. So those actually represent the air element. And sometimes we feel the sweating and even the blood circulation. And all these actually are represented in the water element. And sometimes we feel heat, cold. So that's an indication of the presence of heat element or the fire element. So likewise, more and more, if we recognize these element characteristics, that means that now we are losing the compactness, we are losing the so-called self-view, considering this body as someone, something, as me, mine, as a man, as a woman. So instead of such view, now we understand this body is a collection of four elements. This body is a sort of a manifestation of four elements. So this is, in a way, a further improvement of our understanding, of our wisdom, because having 32 parts, to some extent we are able to penetrate that compact view. But once we recognize elements, so that further will simplify our view, and that leads to a kind of a profound understanding. We need to understand that simplicity leads to profound understanding. So more our mind is subtle, refined and simple, well focused, then these characteristics are available, and as a result our understanding is more and more deeper and deeper. And then Buddha discuss in this sutta about 9 channel ground meditations, what really happened to this body after the death. So far we were discussing about a living body, but at the end of the death, after the death, what's going to happen? So various stages of a decaying corpse is discussed under this. And then now we are discussing about absorptions. So this is something unique to this sutta. So far all the previous techniques are common to Satipatthana Sutta as well. Satipatthana Sutta, of course, going a little deeper into the Satipatthana Bhavana, the meditation aspect. And the Kayagata Sati Sutta basically stop at the level of establishment of mindfulness. and keeping our attention within the body. So that is the level or the boundary that maintained in the Kayagata Sati Sutta. Other than the available these 14 methods, which is common to Kayagata Sati Sutta and Satipatthana Sutta, Kayagata Sati Sutta has 4 jhana included. So that indicates that if one is able to develop jhana and fairly associate them, then mind starts to be within, without going outside, without going here and there. Mind likes to stay within. So this is another advantage of practicing jhana. So we were discussing first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, and fourth jhana, third jhana. Now we hope to discuss about fourth jhana. Now if I little go back to first jhana, so let me little remind the facts. You know, the jhana is a sort of a heightened concentration where mind is fairly absorbed to some sort of a wholesome object. Say, if you are able to develop anapanasati, if once the concentration is built up, that anapanasati meditation itself generates some sort of a sign, what we call a nimitta, concentration sign. So that is actually helpful to attain jhana. So till we get that nimitta, so it's we can't go to much deeper levels of absorption. But once we have that nimitta, have that anapanasati nimitta, counterpart sign, then with the help of that, we can attain certain deeper concentrations. So that is one aspect of anapanasati, but that is not the only method to attain jhana, but there are many other methods, tools to attain jhana. Say, for example, if you are using a kasina. So kasina is another method. By simply looking at it, by memorizing it, you can mentally create or maintain that sign. You can again and again recall that sign. Maybe a color, maybe a quality, you can recall. And as a result, you can get absorbed to it once your mind is again and again applied to it. So likewise, there are many methods to attain jhana. Say you are developing metta. So if you are able to look at someone's image from your mind, and again you are applying your mind to that image, so ultimately the image may even disappear, but the sort of a sign going to be available of that image, sort of a derived sign, and to that you can get absorbed. So therefore metta is another method to attain jhana. So likewise, there are many methods to attain jhana. So we primarily discuss using the anapanasati, and in the first jhana, the difference is that it has 5 jhana factors. We have the continuous again and again applying your mind to the object, and you are maintaining within the object. You are very much like touching, rubbing that object. So that is the vichara. The first one is vitakka. And again, when it is successful, you feel comfortable, you feel happy. It is sort of a pleasurable situation. So therefore we have the piti, that is the third jhana factor. And again, it's a very comfortable, very pleasing experience, very happy experience. So we have the sukha, happiness. And now mind does not distract, mind basically stay within that sign. So therefore we have the concentration or the unity of the mind as well. So therefore we can define first jhana with respect to these 5 jhana factors. Later, one will understand the first 2 jhana factors are a little gross, because again and again the mind has to be applied to this concentration sign, and once applied, you have to navigate within that object. You have to always touch that object, always rub that object, always be with that, be in the sense you have to always touch that object. So this is a kind of a burden. So you have to do something still. There are certain activities available. again and again, the mind has to be applied. It's very much like the mind tries to go out of the object, tries to go out of this sign, and now by mind itself coming back. Again it is going out, again it is coming back. Again it is going out, again it is coming back. It's a kind of a movement. So it's a kind of a defect in other terms, in this first jhana. And on the other hand, once the mind is applied to this certain sign, so it has to be further sort of rub that object, further linger with that object. And it is not yet fully connected to that object, rather it's kind of a little movement is there, but within the boundary. Within the boundary, there's a little movement. It's very much like, suppose you are taking a wild horse to tame, and suppose you have a very strong fence. Wild horse is taken inside the fence. Assume that wild horse is coming out, or rather jumping out. Again you bring it inside. Again it jumps out. Again you carry it inside. So this is very much like vitakka. Yeah, you are again and again horse is brought in. And then once you brought in, it has to behave within the boundary. So that is very much like vichara. So it has a now limited boundary. Within that limited boundary, horse does not stop. It continuously run. Here and there it runs within the boundary, of course. It's very much like vichara. So, but how about only once you take an inside and then it completely keeps still, stay still, then it is more tamed, more developed. So that is the level of second jhana, where you recognize these first two jhana factors are certain limitations as defects available in the first jhana. Therefore, you drop those two jhana factors and you like to unite with the object. So therefore, the first and the second jhana factors are dropped. Only three jhana factors are available. That is, rupture, happiness and unity of mind are available in the second jhana. More and more the concentration is developed, because now there is no applied mind or no sustained mind. It is very much like heavily connected, fully connected with the object. You simply have, only once you have to apply your mind onto the object, onto the sign, once applied, it stuck there. It fully connected with it. There is no movement at all. So therefore, the concentration is very high. It's very much like mind has become singleness. It is kind of a being singleness, single with the object. And then we discuss about the third jhana, where in the second jhana there is rupture present, which has some bodily sensations like waves coming and going, and maybe kind of goosebumps appearing, like time to time sort of electric shock going to happen, something like that. So certain gross level of happiness is there, gross level of pleasure is there. So this gross pleasure becomes certain hindrance once your mind is refined. Now we are going more and more refined level of mind. So there you will understand, to this, for the maintenance of this refined mind, this gross pleasure is a disturbance. So there are, how about dropping this gross pleasure and just to have a sort of a contentment, kind of a feeling at ease. So then it is a more advanced, more refined level. So that is what happened in the third jhana. So that gross happiness being dropped, kept aside, and mind is now fairly unified with the object, and there are no movements, there are no again and again application, but it is fairly united with the object, and the pleasure is removed. Instead, now you have a fairly mature sort of a happiness, fairly mature feeling at ease, which are more serene, more calm, more quiet, more tranquil. So that is the third jhana. Now, when it comes to the fourth jhana, even this happiness is recognized as gross. Now, what are we going to do with this happiness then? So it has to be changed to equanimity. So that is what the only difference in the fourth jhana, where happiness is changed to equanimity. Just more and more, mind has become extremely mindful, fairly concentrated, extremely concentrated, and it is equanimous. So joy is dropped. Any kind of other, say, grief, hatred, and all those other defilements, other hindrances are already dropped. And even the gross level of pleasure, happiness, those are also dropped. Now only the equanimous and united or unity of mind is available. Well concentrated and well equanimous mind is available. So this is the characteristics of fourth jhana. So Buddha gives a beautiful simile here also, where someone is putting a white cloth, kind of covering oneself with a white cloth, complete body being covered by the white cloth. So he is sitting and the sort of white cloth being taken, and from the top to bottom, from the head to toe, it is being covered by this white cloth, the body being covered by the white cloth. Now Buddha says, so there is no any bodily part is visible outside, so the whole body being covered by this white cloth. Similarly, Buddha says, when one develops or when one experiences this fourth jhana, so the whole body, complete body, is pervaded, fully covered by this pure bright mind, which is extremely equanimous, and the purity is there. There are no hindrances, no ups and downs, fairly equanimous, fairly neutral, and fairly stable. So that stability, that neutrality, that purity is the quality of the fourth jhana. So that is being felt by the whole body. The whole body is like very peaceful, very quiet, very calm, very tranquil, very satisfied. And that is the fourth jhana. And if one practices this jhana as well, Buddha says the same benefits. So now one recognizes more and more mature happiness within oneself. So if one wants to be happy, so one can attain this fourth jhana, and fairly equanimous, fairly mature happiness is there. So mind is very healthy, and fairly soothing experience is available, and one feels sort of energized. So this is possible. And then Buddha says, if one is familiarizing with it, if one trains like this, then the mind doesn't go out. Mind doesn't want to go out because mind has found kind of a safe place. Very interesting and friction-free state is available within. Therefore, mind doesn't want to go out. So as a result, various day-to-day act, sort of day-to-day living related mundane thinking, sense pressure related thinking is reduced, diminished, and the mind is fairly unified within the body, inside the body. Mind is fairly concentrated within the body. So these are the benefits available in this fourth jhana. So now we have covered all four jhanas, and only part remaining is, now in this sutta there are much benefits mentioned in terms of the by giving various similes. If one is practicing Kayagata Sati, so we'll cover that part on next week. So with that, I like to conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. So if you have any questions related to today's Dhamma sermon, or if you have received any meditation related questions, so now are you open the sessions for questions?
There's currently three questions.
Yeah.
Question number one is a general question. Dear Bhante, during the last session and a couple of times before, Bhante mentioned about the five indriyas that will be developed as a result of continuous practice. It was mentioned that the mindfulness will balance these five faculties and will be the forerunner to develop and keep them in harmony. If this is a major step in one's practice, then is there a way that we can know or get some understanding of this balancing act? For example, that my effort is not enough, or my samadhi is too much, etc. Or is it purely governed by Dhamma beyond our control, and we can expect that mindfulness will do all the work for us if we just focus on practicing mindfulness. The reason why I'm asking this question is, if I go too much focusing on effort, samadhi, wisdom, etc., I tend to get caught into thinking and mental proliferations. Rather, I'm happy to practice simple walk, sitting, walking, and day-to-day mindfulness again and again for 100 years, and let mindfulness or Dhamma to do the rest of the work. With metta, that's the end.
In the previous part, Chatu, what is the question he is asking?
So I think the question, if I put it simply, it's should I just practice just doing simple mindfulness in sort of practical aspect, or should they be understanding like the five faculties and the balancing act?
So yeah, that information or that say skill, you will slowly develop, and having some understanding about them is useful. Say when you have mindfulness, when you have concentration, when you have wisdom, so you need to separately recognize those qualities. Say for example, you know now what is mindfulness, and there are various times during your day-to-day activities, you recognize I was not mindful. So compared to that unmindful states, you can recognize, okay, at these given moments, I have very good mindfulness. So that indicates that you have clearly recognized what is mindfulness is. What is the quality of mindfulness? What is the presence of the mind? Or what is the wakefulness of the mind? So you have separately able to recognize this awakefulness or mindfulness. And on the other hand, suppose your mind is well concentrated on certain object, say breath, continuously for many consecutive breaths, so mind is able to be with the breath without jumping here and there. So that indicates where amount of concentration is available, and you know this is the quality of concentration, this is the samadhi. And even sometimes, like today, as we discussed, even sometimes probably your mind get absorbed and become unified with the object. So there is no any wavering, there is no any movements at all. So that you understand, though, this is the quality of samadhi. And on the other hand, suppose you are analyzing the object. You are analyzing in the sense you are closely investigating the object. Mind is fairly quiet, but still you clearly recognize the behavior of the object. So as a result, fair amount of wisdom being developed. So mind is very awakened, very diligent, and you can look at various subtle aspects of the object. So that indicates the presence of the wisdom. And once you have some clear understanding about these faculties, especially about these three faculties, sati, samadhi and panya, then it's a matter of growing those. You are engaged with your practice continuously, and you are developing mindfulness, and you maintain the necessary amount of concentration, and as a result, the mind being becoming wise, more and more wise. Now less delusion, you are not being driven after various sights, sounds, etc. Rather, now mind is capable of looking deeper rather than simply surface touching. Mind is capable of penetrating to the object. So likewise, these skills are being developed. So it's a matter of further and further refining these faculties. Suppose at a given time, fair amount of maturity happens in the wisdom. If that sort of a maturity happens, the next level will be available. Actually, you can't sort of wish for this next level, or you can't simply forcefully put your mind to this next level. Rather, what we need to do is to continuously practice. As a result of our continuous practice, mind being developed, the wisdom being developed, and once it reached to some extent, so it will automatically get into the next level. So that is one of the quality of the Buddha's teaching, what we call as Opanika, where it has the capacity to bring the practitioner to the next level once the necessary causes and conditions are satisfied. So it's a matter of building up or strengthening these causes and conditions, and then the mind is automatically uplifted to the next level. So therefore, having some understanding about these faculties is very useful, and you need to continue your practice by investigating all these phenomena, whatever arising. You are ready to observe them, to properly investigate them, and at any given time, once it is reaching fair amount of maturity, especially in the wisdom, then the next level will be automatically available. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 3. This is for walking mindfulness. Dear Venerable Sir, I engage in walking practice quite regularly, and here is my recent experience. I start focusing on the soles of my foot and get to know the various observations, mainly the pressure on the foot, hot and cold nature, and roughness or smoothness of the texture of the touch, etc. I can keep the mind focused like this for 10 to 15 rounds, and there's no need to verbalize left and right. Sometimes thoughts come and I get carried away, but I get to know about this afterwards and the mind comes back to the walking process. After about 30 minutes, I observe that the walking happens happens automatically, but I do not explore on this too much and keep my attention to the sensations since I am a novice. During this time, I observe two things. The first one is the thoughts of raising the foot, moving forward and keeping down, which is the process of walking. The second is the tangible observations of pressure, texture, hot and cold nature. My question is the separation of the process and tangible observations as two knowings, and the tangible observation as two knowings is a known type of experience in the walking practice, or am I too much focused on this technique and visualizing things? Much merits for Bhante's valuable guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, if you are clearly recognizing these qualities, that indicates the improvement of your clear comprehension. As you know, we discuss about mindfulness, that is the sati. And once the mindfulness is well established, we are not simply satisfied with that. Rather, we want to investigate. So this investigation is where taking us to clear comprehension. We are clearly comprehend the object. What are the various details available? What are the subtle aspects available? And we are looking at in different angles and we are trying to observe this object. So this is where the wisdom is start to grow. This is where especially the Dhamma Vichaya Sambojjhanga is going to grow. And if you are able to do that, there is no harm. It is good. And suppose about a week ago, say you only could recognize certain aspects. But now you can recognize more and more aspects. More and more details are visible. And you can recognize the subtle differences happening within the object and very quick arising and passing away, whatever it is. So likewise, if those information is going to be available, that indicates your mindfulness is growing, clear comprehension is growing, and you can welcome that. And on the other hand, if you feel that you are too much analyzing, on the bad thing is if you start to think, you are trying to compare with a book, you are trying to compare with a sermon, then it is out of hand. Then it is wrong actually. Mind has to be always kept quiet while the investigation is going on. And mind is fairly quiet. Inner chatter is stopped. But very sort of a curiosity is there within the mind. And you are carefully observing the aspects of the object. So that is where the wisdom is growing. So this is a kind of a balance. If you are putting too much effort, then kind of a restlessness can happen. You feel a little dry. you feel kind of a restlessness, like agitated. So that indicates you are putting too much effort. At that time, don't do that much of investigation. You calm down. You relax. You like to stay quiet, simply being tranquil. So I think I have discussed while I was discussing Anapanasati Sutta, among these seven enlightenment factors, three belongs to the category of improving the investigation, improving the sort of a dynamics of the mind, and another three actually calms the mind. It's sort of tranquilize the mind. So depending on the situation, we have to select. So this investigation, effort, and the piti, Dhamma Vichaya Virya Piti, those three bhajanga actually contributes to the investigation side. Actually, it has kind of a dynamics of the mind. But if you put it too much, then it can lead to restlessness. At that time, the concentration side, calming down side, has to be improved. So those are the other three enlightenment factors. Sati Dhamma Vichaya Virya Piti, Passaddi Samadhi Upekka. Passaddi Samadhi Upekka. Tranquility, concentration and equanimity. They are the ones tranquilizing the mind. Calms down. Calming down the mind. So those have to be developed if mind become agitated. And if you are putting too much of that, then mind can become drowsy, lethargic. Then that means too much of concentration or too much of tranquility. Too much of equanimity. Then again, you have to improve the investigation. So it's a kind of a balancing. That is where the faculties are to be balanced. That is where the mindfulness factors are to be balanced. So who is showing the clear picture? That is the mindfulness. Sati, mindfulness is the one keeping sort of in par with these two groups. And it telling us, okay, this side is now heavy or this side is now less. So likewise, mindfulness is showing us the balance. Yeah. Back to you, Chatu.
Question number 3 or 4. This is a general question. During some of the practice, Bhante mentioned that once we are in the first jhana, we find the defects of first jhana factors. Similar to Vipassana practice on breathing mindfulness, is this just an observation or knowing or verbalizing logical thinking? That's the end.
Yeah, it is not a verbalizing of logical thinking. And when you are dwelling in the first jhana, suppose you are able to attain first jhana, and when you are associating it, when you are dwelling with it, so say not within a day or two, but after some time, you will recognize this movement happening within the mind is a kind of a disturbance. Because again and again, mind has to be applied to that meditation object. And once it is applied, it is moving within inside. So kind of a movement is there. Still some sort of vibration is there. So this is, you have got to feel it. You have to recognize it as a defect, as a kind of a disadvantage available in the first jhana. So then automatically mind may propose you, how about having more concentrated, more tranquil state of mind, which is free from these movements, free from these ups and downs. How about having a very calm, very quiet, well concentrated, fairly unified state of mind? So there's a kind of a proposal may come from the mind. Then you can drop the first two jhana factors, and you can attain the second jhana. So therefore, it is not simply a logical understanding or rational understanding, but experientially one has to understand the defects of the first jhana. Then one can drop the first two jhana factors and can attain the second jhana. Yeah.
Question number 4. This might be the last one. General question. Everyone say my bhante. The practice is daily mindfulness and looking at thoughts. Lately, when I get up, I have so many thoughts going on inside the mind. This is too quick, and I am unable to stop this running about. Kind guidance is appreciated. Much merits, Bhante. That's the end.
Typically, actually, once we get up, once we wake up, typically mind is calm. So you need to check whether you had a good sleep. So if you couldn't have a good sleep, so probably mind is agitated. So your mind sort of probably have seen a bad dream, a fearful dream that also could sort of agitate the mind. But on the other hand, typically if you have a very good sleep, next morning you feel refreshed. Your mind feel sort of still. And then slowly the agitation can happen. Slowly the rumination can happen. Slowly the sort of movement, distractions can happen. And that is the typical nature of the mind. Say, for example, you are fairly daily practicing, you are maintaining the mindfulness practice, mind is fairly concentrated, and before you sleep, again you do a fair amount of practice. And while just before the fallen sleep, say you are continuing your practice. Suppose you are now in the lying down posture on your bed, and you are keeping your attention on the rising and falling of the abdomen, or you are simply watching the mind, or you simply keep your mind empty, whatever it is, depending on your situation. That indicates till you fall asleep, you have never given up the practice. So while practicing, you fall asleep. And then the next day morning, you may feel fresh, and you may feel the mind is fairly recharged and it's very tranquil. So that is the benefit of the practice. And as a result, but later, once you open your eyes and once you started to recognize various sounds, smells, etc., then again the mind starts to distract. So that is how the typical behavior of the mind. So therefore, please check in, and once you wake up, immediately if mind starts to talk, or and if you feel sort of tired, so there could something wrong in your sleeping style, sleeping cycle. Yeah.
Question number five. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Bante, I have thoughtless moments in meditation, and the thoughtless moments are for 2 to 3 minutes. Is this stillness of the mind or not? Appreciate your guidance. Dharan Sanai with Metta. That's the end.
So actually, the thoughtless moments can happen either in, say, samatha practice as well as in the vipassana practice. But I presume this has happened in the vipassana practice. I mean, say, for example, you are observing various feelings, or you are observing various thought processes. And suppose, while you are doing that, and you recognize, okay, the inner chatter has completely quieted down, and the thoughts randomly come and go, and there are little gaps, and you are observing the mind as well. Suppose there is a subtle, say, lustful thought arise, and you recognize it, and then it has gone. Then there's another sort of a greedy thought arise, and you recognize it, and it is gone. And after that, suppose there's a gap, there is no thought at all. So at that time, simply be vigilant, simply be aware of that. So don't worry about it, don't introduce any doubt about it, don't become anxious about it, simply just be. Because now only you allow the mind to be still, as you have clearly mentioned. So this is kind of a stillness of the mind, clarity of the mind, because the presence of the thoughts indicate kind of a disturbance. But when all these thoughts are gone away and completely, it's very much like ripples in a ocean, or ripples in a reservoir, ripples in the water. So when the ripples, all the ripples are calmed down, then we have the stillness, then we have the calmness, then we can see deeper. When no ripples are present, then you can see the depth or the bottom of the lake. Similarly, in the mind also, when there are no thoughts, then the calmness is available, then the clarity is available, then the presence is available, the simplicity is available, calmness is available, spaciousness is available, and mind is attached to nothing. mind does not hold anything at that time. So these are certain qualities available through the practice, and if you are able to recognize that, encourage that, appreciate that state of mind, and again come to that state, and you develop your mindfulness practice so that you are able to access that stillness again and again. Once you are there, be quiet, just be, don't spoil it, just be.
Question number 6. It's a general question. Bhante, in Samatha practice, we have heard there are jhana levels which give you superpowers. For example, reading others' minds. Are these after the fourth level and further in practice? That's the end.
I also heard about them, but don't worry, I have nothing of them. So I can't read your mind. But anyway, as you have mentioned, they are typically after the fourth jhana. I mean, not before fourth jhana. After the fourth jhana only, one is get into, one can get into those, what you call abhinya, the direct knowledges. And it is also not an easy thing. Don't expect it to happen immediately or it's a very easy thing. I mean, it's a years of practice. And there are mastery of jhana is necessary to arouse that kind of abhinya, that kind of skill, that kind of a capability. So nowadays it is very rare, because now the human mind is fairly deluded or fairly spoiled, polluted by various sensual desires and etc. So, but on the other hand, during the Buddha's time, the minds are fairly simple and they have the direct knowledges, they have the a fairly purified mind, and they are of fairly highly concentrated. And therefore, such skills were available, but nowadays it is very, very rarely that we hear such skills. Yeah.
That's actually the last question that we have for today.
So hope Chatu don't have that skill, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
We have probably another 10 minutes, Bhante. Should we finish up early or...
Yeah, I would like to finish up then, Chatu, because that conference has already started. Bhante Dhammajiva may have already started. So I like to join with the conference now. So I request all of you to continue your practice, and we'll have this typical schedule, normal schedule on next week. But today I apologize for this little change of the schedule. So thank you very much for participation.
Thank you.